Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything we think we know about food. I'm Anthony Zara, and this episode was recorded live at the Food Matters Live event held in Manchester in May 2025. Today, we're talking fibre, described by one of our expert panel as a guilt-free carb. We're asking why it's proving so difficult to get us eating more of it.
Our panel now is going to really, up our game on fibre and start to think about, well, what are the challenges from an NPD perspective and how can we react to the need for more fibre-based products in the marketplace? So I'm delighted to welcome our panellists, Eric, Susan and Fionn, to join us on stage now. The usual format, I'm going to get each of you to just introduce yourselves, talk a little bit about your role and the organisation that you represent. And then I'm going to start by throwing out the question around, look, we've just heard that fibre is having a bit of a moment, yet it's been a word and a nutrient, I guess it's been around for a long time. But why now? What's different at this moment? Why are we bringing fibre more and more into the conversation? So over to you, Fionn.
Thanks very much. So I'm Fionn McKinwar. I work at the Food and Drink Federation, which is a trade association for UK food and drink manufacturers. In my role, I work in the diet and health team, and a big part of my role is looking after our initiative called Action on Fibre, which is where members are signing up to help bridge the fibre gap. And I'm sure I'll talk more about that later. In terms of why now, when it comes to fibre, we haven't been eating enough fibre, and that's actually been consistent for a very long time. So I think it's great that we're now having the opportunity that fibre is getting a bit more of a buzz and hopefully encouraging more awareness for consumers. I definitely think over COVID, Kantar data shows as well that there was an increase in consumers looking for food for health, which I think has driven quite a lot of that interest and awareness for fibre. So I think that's kind of a big reason for that.
Yeah, so my name is Eric Holub. I'm a professor at the University of Warwick. You can see from my label, I consider myself professionally a plant geneticist. That traces back to when I was a 14-year-old in the swing state of Wisconsin. I had really good parents that got me interested in science and cooking and sewing and growing plants. But I wanted to go to university, and I had a mathematical interest. So genetics was a really good conduit to get into a profession where I could think about developing new varieties of crops for food. But I think of myself now more as a food system scientist. We just had a two-year project called Bean Meals, a multidisciplinary project looking at if beans, basically. That these are some varieties that we've been able to develop using plant breeding. And that two-year project was a chance to look at food systems in an academic sort of way and identify what was missing in the food system to bring something like this into the marketplace. And the answer was meal tech. People that actually are agents of change that cook food, you already know technology because of what you do in a kitchen. If anybody, does anybody here cook food from scratch?
Yeah.
Yeah, good number of you. So you're basically already into technology in a kitchen. So I consider that meal tech. It's something that I've come to learn about through involvement in food system work in this Bean Meals project with my colleagues, using tools of foods of systems thinking to try and look at a food system and figure out what's missing, what can be changed. This is actually what geneticists do, what things are could be changed in an organism. And I think if we link it to the question about is fiber essential, and if we update our knowledge through some genetics, we are all what we're called holobionts. We can't survive without the microbes in our gut. And those gut microbiomes eat things. They ferment the things that we eat, like fiber. So it is an essential. And it's through things like genetics and thinking about our health and nutrition that we start to update things. We realize that maybe the next step is to go back in the kitchen, find some ingredients like beans, and just start eating happy carbohydrate. Not the carbohydrate that we're guilty eating, like glucose and sugar. Carbohydrate that actually makes us happy. as Clem was describing.
What do you think is driving the sort of awareness of fibre at the moment? Where do you think it's coming from? Where is it rooted in?
Well, I would say, given what I've been learning the last couple of years, what's driving it are people that are in kitchens choosing things that they want to eat that makes them feel good, and then being able to share that with whoever's eating the food. And it extends into food service and beyond. So it's that awareness that you have just from what makes you feel healthy and those people that are helping it come forward.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Susan, welcome.
Hi, everybody. I'm the layman amongst all these experts. My name's Susan Gaffson, and I started a brand called Pep and Lekker. And we make high fiber, tasty snacks made from 12 all natural plant-based ingredients, including lots of diverse fibers, linseeds, oat flakes, chia seeds, inulin. Why do I think that fiber? So I think that from a health perspective, I think that lots of people have started to look at plant-based food. There's been lots of scientific research around gut health with Tim Spector, mm-hmm. and lots of fantastic brands coming up which are focused on gut health. I think that fiber is a bit tricky in the UK. From my age group, fiber was things like all bran and dusty and tasteless food, and fiber wasn't very sexy. Whereas I think, you know, terminology like gut health, you know, proteins, all very sexy. But people don't really talk about fiber in the same way as they do about protein, for instance. Whereas I think that most of us get sufficient protein and don't have to have all these extra protein, but many of us struggle to eat fiber. So I do think we struggle here because we don't like talking about stools and, you know, the nastier parts of gut health.
I absolutely can relate to that. And I suppose building on that and linking back to Clem's stats around the percentage of people who are getting sufficient fibre on a day-to-day basis, which was 10%, was it, which is incredible. What are the challenges then in incorporating meaningful fibre into our daily diets? What are the challenges, Fionn?
I think that one of the key challenges when it comes to incorporating fibre from like a technical standpoint is the challenges of different fibres. So, you know, if you have like a whole grain or something like that and putting that in bread, it's different. It acts differently to a white flour. So there are technological challenges there. And I'm sure many of the companies who are hosting kind of the Taste of Better sessions will be able to, you know, talk you through the different fibres that they use and the technical challenges that they have and what kinds of products they can go into. But also that consumer awareness piece and the consumer perception. So as you mentioned, Susan, consumers often, when you look at consumer research, think that fiber is bland, boring, it takes a long time to cook. And those are all big barriers to consumers eating more fiber and incorporating more fiber. And when you think about how you get consumers to that point, if you put out a product that's high fiber, you have to think, will a consumer actually look at that and then think, oh, I want to buy that? Or they think, oh, actually, that might be bland, might be a bit boring.
Eric? I guess I would say one major barrier is a lot of the conversation, and perhaps the way we're thinking now, is we're thinking about retail as a way to deliver fiber. And there's some really good examples where that is going to be a way forward. But there is another element, which is from the kitchen and from food service. So just taking food service, looking at ingredients that can be added to cook from scratch, adding beans is a very easy way to do. And you can solve the convenience situation just by having a source of beans that are cooked that can go into a restaurant. An example that I'm aware of is at the University of Warwick. They've just recruited a new food service team about 18 months ago, and they were brought in with the intention of feeding a consumer base, students and staff, with food cooked from scratch in a kitchen on campus. And the conversation just takes off in a different direction when you've got something like a team of food service people that want to have healthier meals for healthier minds. What ingredients can you add to that? And, you know, fiber is a very easy one for them to look down through the...
And if we think of the big players in the out-of-home sector, Eric, is there anybody who's sort of leading on fiber and integrating it really nicely into menus and sort of, who's in that space at the moment that we can kind of use as the benchmark?
Just drawing on the example of the food service at the university, that kitchen wants to have a kitchen for students to learn how to cook. So you're just thinking through the marketplace. If you're looking for healthy food while you're studying, but you have an opportunity to learn how to cook, and you see some recipes that are actually being presented in a cafeteria or restaurant, you make that connection for yourself, and it's very social, so you might cook and share with others. But it's very easy, sort of the vertical generations, you know, students will have siblings at home and parents and grandparents. So it becomes a very community building up marketplace.
Building the skill set, the education, from a young age. Absolutely. Susan, any thoughts
on that? Yeah, I think that I would add that in the past, I think quite a few products that have been high fiber have also been high sugar. So they're not particularly healthy. Mm-hmm. And so people are used to not kind of tasting fiber because it's just been masked with so much sugar and other unhealthy food. I think now there are brands such as Bold Bean who are working with chefs like Ottolenghi, showing people what fantastic things that you can do with beans. I know that with our crackers, we do quite a lot of recipes showing how people can eat them. I know it sounds obvious, everybody knows how to eat with crackers, but you know, until you kind of show people, well, actually, you can eat this fiber and you can put on top of it your lovely cheese or hummus or dips, or and then people can see, well, you don't have to add sugar and processed food. And
yeah, so you're giving them the inspiration, which links back to the education, and therefore people are sort of owning it themselves. Very good. Brilliant. Fionn, to come back to you and just talk a little bit about some of the initiatives within the FDF around fibre. It is your kind of area of specialism. What are the activities that are going on within the Federation to really get fibre up there?
Of course. So at FDF, we launched Action on Fibre, which is a positive industry-led initiative whereby the companies who are signed up are working to help bridge the fibre gap. And they're trying to do this by making higher fibre diets more appealing, normal and easy for the population. Because when you think about behaviour change, you know, how do you get a consumer to change their behaviour? Making it more appealing, making it more normal and easy for them to get is a key way to do that. So since we launched, we now have 22 brands who are signed up to bridge the fibre gap, and they've been doing some really great activities when it comes to how they do that. So some of it is product specific. So looking at trying to launch new products or reformulating existing products to be higher in fibre, but it's also things around how do you raise consumer awareness? So looking at messaging to consumers, like you were talking about recipes, lots of recipe suggestions on how you use the products that they have or that they've launched to make a high fibre meal. But also looking at workforce. So, you know, in canteens, what kind of higher fibre options can they give, or how do they educate their employees to look at more high fibre things? And one thing that we quite excitingly launched earlier this year was a retail partnership. So we had Lidl, who was the first retailer to join Action on Fibre. And they've made some excellent commitments, looking to increase the fibre sold by 2026 by 20%, and also looking to increase whole grains as a to 25% of total grain sold by 2030. So I think that's really, really exciting to see. And I know that retailers do a lot of work in this space. So I think it would be nice to see more retailers and manufacturers getting on board to expand that.
Brilliant. Thank you, Fionn. Lots of great initiatives. And just to context, 22 brands is what proportion of your entire for the members?
So the brands we have signed up, it's not all of our members, but they cover quite a few categories. So looking at breads and breakfast cereal, so big players in that space, but okay. also looking at ready meals as well and like snack brands.
Very good, very good. Eric, just talking about, I suppose, plant breeding techniques, what's happening to sort of increase fibre within that whole process, and how is that going to add value around, I suppose, end consumer products or ingredients, or help manufacturers here to be able to, you know, promote fibre more in their products?
Yeah. So I think you've probably heard the example with lima grain and being able to boost fiber in something like wheat.
Yeah, great.
That's a really good example of a grain that can be used to formulate better bread. From the standpoint of legumes, actually the question is probably not so much about breeding fiber, it's breeding things that can actually carry the fiber into our meals. And a really important thing for consideration is who's going to grow it. Mm-hmm. So with breeding and genetics, you know, something like the beans that we've been developing, they are for production of these ingredients by farmers here in the UK. So it does provide an issue of sustainability.
Are farmers bought in? Is it?
At the moment, yes, we're just at a stage of getting farmers organized. And a lot of it's dependent on the amount of seed that's available.
Of course.
But we'll be planting tomorrow in Lincoln with Andy Ward, who's a lead farmer in this effort. But learning with a farmer, you realize, going back to the meals, that this isn't a case about replacing imports. If anybody likes beans and tomato sauce, we should be eating those, because this idea of the fiber gap, if you're already eating something, keep eating it, but we need to add things to our options to eat, and things that are going to be affordable and accessible to reach more people. So the interesting thing with the breeding and genetics is actually to find things that are missing in the options for our farmers to grow, but they won't grow it unless there's demand. So it does rely on people that want to eat those ingredients, such as beans, to bring them into the marketplace. So whether it's high fiber wheat and a white bread with that that wheat variety in, or some other things that are in the kitchen that you can cook with yourself from scratch, they all go together. It's about adding options.
Brilliant. And I keep thinking about the Bold Bean Company is a brand that have really, you know, sort of thrown the bath out and kind of thought beans as a category, and probably at a great time as well because of all the added benefits, as you've just talked about.
I think the real benefit of them is, of that business, is they've actually have a cookbook as well. So you can be inspired to cook with their product, but they also encourage you to try other versions of dry beans or cans or whatnot.
Yeah. So, I mean, the brand, so Amelia is a chef. So that's a kind of very helpful starting point, you know, for her brand. And so she's just by instinct comes up with all the recipes and
Super. And I suppose one of the things that she's been really good at is education through the recipe book, as we've talked about. But talking about your own brand, Susan, what are you doing to educate consumers? I know you talked about your recipe development on social media, etc. What else are you doing to encourage people to eat more of your delicious products that happen to be high in fiber?
Well, I have given talks in schools.
Very good.
So I gave a talk in a school recently, and also quite a few primary schools now are trying to educate children about where their food comes from. So they're interested to learn about seeds and beans, and there's also the sustainability angle that they're interested in, because beans are a sustainable product. Yes, so through working with schools, generally social media, doing various collaborations with other brands that align with the same values, to promote eating more fiber and eating better.
Brilliant. And what does the sort of MPD funnel look like for you as a brand? Are you able to share what sort of direction you'll take next?
Well, I mean, to be very transparent, you know, I'm growing organically. I don't have a huge team behind me. So I think at the moment I'm just working on trying to get the crackers, available to as many people as possible. And then there obviously could be options to sell them with dips or other products so that people have, healthy options in one, so they don't have to bring their own, you know, topping with them with the crackers.
Yeah, super, super. Susan mentioned collaboration, Fionn, and industry collaborations really important in whatever topic we're discussing or we're trying to face into. What's happening from a sort of industry collaboration perspective, particularly for from an FDF perspective, and what great initiatives are going on that maybe people mightn't be aware of just yet?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think one of the things I always talk about when it comes to industry collaboration is the Danish Whole Grain Partnership, which came, it's a public-private partnership that was set up in, I think, 2008, and it involved the Danish government, NGOs, and also industry coming together to try and increase whole grain consumption. As a result of the Atkins and low carbohydrate diets, they had seen that lots of the Danish population had decreased their intake. And they had a really excellent success. So in like the first, I think, 10 years of the initiative, they managed to increase whole grain consumption from 36 to 82 grams per day, which is a massive achievement. Really, really good. They also had lots of buy-in from industry. So at the start of the initiative, they had like a whole grain logo. So if your product had the logo on it, then it would show that it was, I think, either was like high in whole grain or had a portion of whole grain. So when they first started, there were, I think, under 200 products that had the logo. And then after 10 years, it went up to over 1,000. So you can see the industry really bought into that. And I think that's like that is a very good example and best practice of how you can work in partnership to achieve a really good public health outcome. In terms of what FDF are doing, so one of the things we have done is worked with Louise Dye at the University of Sheffield on some really exciting projects, so connecting her with some of our members. One of the things she's been recently doing is working with AB Mowry to develop a higher fiber bagel that they've put into school breakfast clubs. And one of the things when it comes to children is that you can think they're quite picky. They don't really like whole grain. But what they found through their trial is that the higher fiber bagels, there was no difference in terms of liking or preference, which I think is a really great outcome. Louise also did some work with Jackson's of Yorkshire, where they contributed wholemeal breads into some schools in, I think, Liverpool. And they also did some like pre and post intervention tests, which looked at attainment and attendance. And it showed that with the good quality good quality breakfast, that there were improvements in like attendance and concentration for children. So I think that gives you like a really good example of how that industry and academic collaboration can actually have some really tangible outcomes that if you were to, you know, broaden that out, then you could see some really important and good impacts across the UK.
Brilliant. Certainly gives us lots of hope and great case studies and examples. Eric and Susan, have you seen anything else from a sort of collaboration across the industry that's really tackling it?
Well, just picking up on a school example with our Bee Meals project, we were working at schools in Leicestershire. They were schools identified by the Soil Association, their Food for Life program. And the message that came out with the kids would be more than happy to eat the beans that they were being offered by their cooks. The cooks were very engaged. They started asking questions about procurement supply chain. So the whole of Leicestershire County and Leicestershire City want to know where these beans could come into the marketplace. And because of our systems thinking in that collaboration, the academic collaboration, it basically comes to the notion that we need to have something that will manage a marketplace for these new varieties. So it does lead itself to, we need some kind of a spin-out company that fits in the middle, short supply chain, with the consumers being actually the cooks and the kids, creating the demand for something that they would like to have available through procurement, So then you've got the demand for farmers to grow the varieties. And just that very simple lesson, short supply chain, is entirely collaboration. And the next step is spin out a company.
Yeah.
I think what's sad is that we haven't particularly seen, well, I haven't seen that much government regulation or proposals around fibre or introducing more fibre. We've seen the HFSS, you know, which is all about high fat and sugar and salt. And when you look at the consultation paper and what foods are permitted and what and how you calculate scores, they don't give enough credence to foods that are high fiber and low sugar. And so and those sorts of things, I think, are disappointing. It would be good to see the government promote fibre more.
I might throw it over to Fionn from a regulatory point of view. Are there any policies on the horizon, or are there any changes upcoming that we should be aware of and watching out?
There are no policies when it comes to fibre on the horizon, but I know we know that government is working on a new food strategy, so it may be the case that something from fibre comes out of that. I think that will be quite nice to see a bit of a focus on fibre, or I guess more holistic, not just looking at the nutrients of concern, but also positive nutrients.
Exactly. That's kind of what I'm saying, rather than a negative, giving more of a positive.
But we do know that the Scientific Advisory Committee on Nutrition are in process of writing a position statement on whole grains, so they're doing a bit of scoping work and looking into whether I guess they can do a recommendation on a definition for whole grain, number one, because we don't actually have that in the UK, where some countries in Europe have that. We only have something on fibre. But if they can think up of a definition, or there's enough evidence behind having a definition of what actually counts as whole grains, then can they make a recommendation? Mm-hmm. So I think coming from that, there might be a bit of buzz back to fibre, and that might be an avenue for us to kind of start calling for a bit more focus when it comes to fibre. And I know, although HFSS, that's a big policy area and it does focus on nutrients of concern, you can use fibre as an avenue for sugar and fat reduction. So I do think that where people have been focusing on HFSS, they've also used that as an opportunity to increase the amount of fibre, because it can support in terms of reducing the sugar and reducing the fat, and therefore getting a score that's like a non-HFSS score.
Yeah. But for instance, sorry, this is just one of my bugbears, the HFSS does not recognise seeds, which I find, amazing. But
The bean meals product I just mentioned, that was funded by the taxpayer to transform our food system. And it was built on the notion that we need to change HFSS in our food supply. But what we learned in the 2 years with our small project was that the issue actually should be focused on fiber. And we went through, in those 2 years, we did a transition away from sugar and fat and salt. What we were working with was something that had protein in it, and we were saying it was sustainable if we could get to the market. But the end of it was fiber was what's going to pull through. And you learn that from the cooks. And you know, something like a cracker, a biscuit or whatever with whole seeds on it, fits straight into that. So fiber is raising the agenda. I guess I would have a concern that we have something like a national food strategy consultation. There's also the land use consultation, but the two aren't being connected up
together.
And just having drawing a wedge between farmers that want to grow food.
But that might be your answer to my final question before we throw it out to the audience. I was just going to say, what's your one wish to change something to get our numbers up from 10%, you know, as high as, let's be optimistic, to 80 or 90% of, you know, meeting those dietary requirements on a daily basis? What's your one wish, or what's the one thing that needs to happen? Fionn, I'll start with yourself.
I would say taking some learnings from the Danish Whole Grain Partnership. I think manufacturers are doing some great work when it comes to increasing fibre in products and trying to raise awareness, but we're very limited in what we can and can't say when it comes to health and claims regulation. So it's very difficult for manufacturers and also healthcare professionals actually to communicate when it comes to health benefits. So I think that's like a key area where we can work together in terms of government having some kind of public health campaign. As we know, they haven't had anything that focuses on fibre, but something that talks about fibre, but also other NGOs and other people who can speak to consumers about the benefits of fibre and why we should be consuming more fibre to also do that. And I think doing that together along will kind of support in trying to get us to bridge the fibre gap.
Brilliant. And if somebody in the audience wanted to read more on the Danish Whole Grain Project, where would you send them to?
You can go online to find out more about Danish Whole Grain Partnership. I wrote a paper with some other academics, which took learnings from the Danish Whole Grain Partnership and think about how we could transfer that to the UK. So that's also a very interesting paper to read to get a bit of background on it.
Brilliant. Thank you, Fionn. Eric, your one wish?
I would say my wish is that we collectively recognize that fiber is the guilt-free, happy carbohydrate.
Love that.
Yeah.
And
there's a slogan.
It's cross retail and food service and cooking at home. So whatever we are doing, it's probably going to be much more in our hands to bring things through enterprise and options, adding options to what's available rather than necessarily waiting for the government to solve it for us. Cool. But we put the pressure on and we show good examples.
Susan, what's your one wish?
So I suppose adding on to what you've said, because that obviously holds true, is more kind of positive messages around fibre and, as you say, good carbohydrates, rather than focusing just on counting calories and, you know, fats when people don't really understand what are good fats and bad fats. And just trying to give more positive messages around food, to encouraging people to have better, healthy mindset towards food and eating the right food.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, look, I think when you put these wishes out to the world, that's as much as we can do for now. And hopefully all those changes come into play. And when we sit here in 10 years time, we're not talking about this in the negative way anymore. We have time for questions. So I'm going to throw it out to the floor. Anybody want to get involved in the conversations? We have Clem here at the front as well. So if you have any particular questions for her or any of the panelists, feel free. Fantastic, gentlemen at the back. Just introduce yourself. Let us know who you're from.
Hi, I'm Somi, head of new product development and innovation at Naturia. And the question I have is, when it comes to fiber, especially high in fiber product, which is a fiber coming from different ingredient, all you can say is just high in fiber. You cannot make any health claims, though we can see a lot of the health benefits associated with the fiber. I'm just wondering, when you want to encourage people to take more fiber into the diet, all you can say is high in fiber, but you can't go more than that, except when you have certain fibers like inulin or oat fiber, things like that. I'm just wondering why regulation is not putting any, allowing the food manufacturers to make some health claims.
Anybody?
I can take that. Yeah, you're very right. When it comes to claims around fiber, you can only say if it's source of or high in. And then if you've got specific fibers, the claims are very unappealing to consumers because it's things like fecal bulk, which nobody really wants to put on the front of a package. In terms of claims around fiber, I think it goes back to the evidence. So in order for you to do a health claim, you have to kind of submit a really long dossier and then they have to approve it. So it can be very challenging to get that process through. So I think as a not workaround but alternative is for other people who are able to talk about the benefits of fiber to talk about it, to say a diet high in fiber is not just beneficial for gut health but all of those other kind of positive aspects that it does for health. So as manufacturers we can't say that, but other people can. So it's really encouraging those people who can talk about it to continue to talk about it, because although we know that people don't eat enough fiber and fiber's been trundling along in the background for a long time, I wonder if some healthcare professionals or other people still they recognize that, but do they still understand that we are still very far off from reaching the dietary requirement or recommendation? So it's not something that should be forgotten, but to keep talking about it.
Super. Great question. I know Sharon is in the audience from Camden. I don't know if she wanted to add to that just from a regulatory perspective.
Basically, and you're absolutely right. And I know how frustrating it is. We deal with questions like that all the time. But it is, unfortunately, the regulation is very much focused on the evidence-based dossiers that were submitted many years ago now. So there is a mechanism to get more added to the list of authorized claims, but it is very onerous. It might be the collaboration route might be a good way to go, where industry can actually join together to try and get these dossiers prepared, because it is a hefty investment and time consuming as well.
Great. So, Thank you.
We've managed to put gut health on the front of our pack because we use inulin, and the supplier of the inulin has a claim associated, and we had to do a particular fiber test to show that we had the correct amount per serving. And then we've got certain wording on the pack to support that and explain what the serving is and how much you need per day, which I'm sure people don't read. But yeah, it is very limited. And as you said right at the beginning, high in fiber does not attract the same excitement as high protein.
Right. I got that as well. And it's a really important question, but it prompts me to wonder, well, if this information isn't going to be read, then is there another way to get someone to trust a product to be healthy? And if the consumer knows something about seeds as sources of fiber, it's that education through ingredients and things that taste good, building trust in a brand. You don't need the information in detail anymore if there's education that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think with every brand, that's how you grow trust. It's not just the pack and what's on the front of pack in terms of the claims. It's your social media content, it's your website, it's your turning up at schools, it's doing demos in store. It's all of those touch points that help to educate the consumer. And I guess that's another way of looking at it, as opposed to just honing in on the words that do definitely sound a little negative.
A really good example would be, I'm sure you're all familiar with a certain kind of baked beans. A really major canner of baked beans that are really popular in the UK. If you turn around the side, the top in bold letters list of information is high fiber. It's been there all along. But people might eat that product not because it's high fiber, it's because of something else about the brand.
Because it's high in sugar.
Except it's also lower in sugar than it used to be. So by stealth, sugar is coming down. And high fiber has always been there, top of the list on the side of the packet.
Indeed.
So brand matters, but new brands and market share becomes the real challenge.
Fantastic. Any other questions before we wrap up? We've certainly got time for one more.
Hi, Leo Campbell, a company called Modern Baker. Isn't one of the issues with explaining fiber's impact that not all fibers are equal? In fact, they are phenomenally different in a quality. So, I mean, I would put 10x between a good one and a bad one. So it's very hard when you start trying to promote fiber if you're straying away from it being a good fiber. How do you manage that? Because if you give somebody a high fiber claim or some other accolade for the fiber work, and yet 10 grams of insoluble fiber, highly refined, that's not even talking to your gut microbiome, it sort of knocks the heart out of the point, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. No, it's a really interesting point, Leo. Thank you for drawing that to our attention. I was going to give it to Clem to maybe just talk about it, maybe add to the point.
I mean, you're making a very good point. Dozens of different type of fiber. They all have different function, and some people will be after different kind of function. So it's quite. And then there is quality of the fiber, like you said. So it's quite challenging. But I think we need to improve the label as well. I mean, some people will not want to eat inulin because for them they've got IBS, and for them it's really important that they can trace it in the food that that is on offer, we need to educate people about the fact that we can't talk about fiber as one thing. Mm-hmm. It needs to go to a lower level of granularity in terms of what they do to our health.
Dare I say it, is it a bit like good fats, bad fats? Comparable?
I think maybe we can go back to the earlier session. I mean, the answer might be not fiber as an ingredient, but gut health, feeding our gut microbiome. So in that sort of realm, then we're talking about eating diversity. So it's not just one fiber, it is the mixture of fibers that Clem described to us. So think about adding things to your diet. The more you add,
the broader the variety, the breadth. Yeah, absolutely. But thank you, Leo. We do have to wrap up this session. In the meantime, I just want to say thank you to Fionn, to Eric, and to Susan.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Before you go, we've got some exciting news to share about more live events this year. We're heading to Ascot in October and Dublin in November. And for the first time, we're hosting an event in mainland Europe. In September 2025, we'll be in Rotterdam. Join us as we inspire the future of food. Learn more and sign up at foodmatterslive.com.